Hello, and welcome to Ask an Atheist, a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. My name is Sam Mulvey, and do not adjust your set. With me today is Case, and all the way from Texas, Russell Glasser.
How well, hello, Russell? Seattle.
Welcome.
This has been a real interesting one. It's great to be here,
yeah.
Comparing notes and noticing the sort of continual...
Having a contest to see whose Access Studio is worse to work with.
Whose sound is weirder. Speaking of studios, we're going to dive right into the announcements today. Just very quickly, I don't know if you've been following some of the stories on the internet on the Scan TV website or on Facebook, but... It's come down. This network that we're on right now will be going off the air as of December 31st, 2010. And as a result, Ask an Atheist will no longer be on this network. However, we want to make it clear to the viewers and listeners of this program that the producers are committed to putting the show on the air and on the internet. And we have some plans. Unfortunately, we're not really in a position to tell you what the future is, but please watch the website, watch our Facebook page, and watch here, and we have the announcements ready to go. We'll be filling everybody in. And I see what the potentials are right now, and I think people are going to be very surprised with what the replacement of the show is. So that's pretty much our most important announcement. So let's just dive right into news, if you'd like.
Okay, I get the first story.
Yeah.
First, I'd like to mention, since it's my first time here, I have heard Casey making challenges to Matt Dillahunty for a few months about a Street Fighter match. I'm not even sure if he's noticed that they were. That Casey was asking for this, but I will happily stand in to challenge him to a one-on-one StarCraft II match.
Oh, StarCraft II.
Okay, so. Just wanted to get that out there.
Up in the ante a little bit.
Yeah. Polish exorcists are gathering in Warsaw for their national congress, confident in the knowledge that their numbers are increasing as more and more Poles struggle with satanic possession. The National Congress comes as a part of a policy by Poland's Catholic Church to lift the veil on what was once a secretive practice. Since 1999, the number of Polish exorcists has surged from 30 to over 100, despite the influence of the Catholic Church waning in an increasingly secular Poland. Exorcists attribute the increase in their numbers to growing skepticism in psychology in the wider Polish population and people looking for spiritual reasons for mental disorders. In recognition of modern science, however, exorcists now work in tandem with psychologists in order to distinguish between psychiatric problems and the work of the devil.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. And how exactly do you distinguish between those two?
I don't know, because you can't actually test for whether the devil is doing something, because that's not supposed to be something you can investigate.
Do we have WHO or CDC numbers on satanic possession?
I don't think they listed those studies. The thing is, I don't blame the exorcists for this story. I mean, they're supposed to act stupid. I don't hold that against them, really. I just want to know, what the heck is up with the media reporting it like this, as if this made the slightest bit of sense at all?
Right. Well, the usual implication, and we see this again and again, is that a demonic possession leads to skepticism and atheism and whatnot. That it can't be we've changed our minds or we've decided that the world is, the secular world makes a lot of sense and the scientific theories make a lot of sense. It's we caught the devil off a toilet seat or something like that. And
right. Of course, for all you know, we're actually demons trying to fool you into laughing at this stuff.
Get those 3D specs out, and maybe we might change or something. And if you notice that, do call in. Our phone number is 206-421-5658. We are a live call-in show. You can call in at any time. You can discuss with us what we're talking about now, or if you have a different topic you'd like to bring to the show, we'd be happy to discuss it.
Good thing I'm off camera so people can't see my eyes turning to slits.
All right.
And they changed back. Okay.
Well, yep. You know.
You know, one thing that story really speaks to is just the lack of scientific literacy among certain countries. I mean,
I'm hesitant to say that Poland won that Poland is one of those countries. I mean,
too.
Polish jokes notwithstanding.
Yeah.
They tend to be, I think, a pretty sane country.
There's a big history of free thought and skepticism in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of, I mean, maybe this is their response to that, is they're just going to say this history is all Satan, but.
Right. I mean, I think it's more like there are stupid people everywhere.
Yeah.
And in troubled economic times, people tend to make stuff up as an explanation for their problems because there are so many more problems.
Sure, yeah. And as Frank Zappa said, we're dumb all over.
Right.
<So. laughs>
And I think we have some idiots right here in the United States, don't we?
A few. Yeah. Oh, boy. Our next story.
I am the king of segues.
Oh, boy. Segway fight, go.
That was smooth.
No, my only segues are to the RAM for some reason. Anyway, this comes to us from the Daily Mail, known institution of journalism. The planet won't be destroyed by global warming because God promised Noah, says politician bidding to chair U.S. Energy Committee. A Republican congressman hoping to chair the powerful House Energy Committee refers to the Bible and God on the issue of global warming. Representative John Shimkus insists we shouldn't be concerned about the planet being destroyed because God promised Noah it wouldn't happen again after the Great Flood. Speaking before a House Energy Subcommittee on Energy and Environment hearing in March 2009, Shimkus quoted Chapter 8, Verse 22 of the Book of Genesis. He said, "As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, dog sleeping and cat sleeping together, will never cease." Cut out the dog and cat sleeping together thing, but... the Illinois Republican continued, "I believe that is the infallible word of God, and that's the way it is going to be for his creation. The earth will end only when God declares it's time to be over. Man will not destroy the earth. The earth will be destroyed by a flood." That's the guy. We try not to get into politics on the show very much, is that atheism is not a political stance. However, injection of religious rhetoric into national politics makes it something we have to talk about. And, we'll get back to this. We do have a call. Let's talk to Lex in Seattle. Are you there?
Hey, here I am.
Hello.
Hi, Lex.
Hi.
Hi, Lex.
What do you got for us?
Well, I just want to say, first of all, I love you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I just wanted to hit on one quick point, which you were saying about basically bringing the Bible into politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we didn't do this; they did. And I just think, can people really be stupid enough to not understand how much worse things have gotten since they've done that? And the so-called thing about, no, God will not destroy the world because he told Noah. Well, I don't know. Maybe the guy was kicking back with a joint and talking to Noah himself. I don't know. But all these people that use religion as, I mean, I have done some of the most evil, racist, anti-Semitism, all of it in the name of God.
Sure.
And the thing is, how do they even know there's a God?
Yeah.
Know is that I'm alive, and I do good things. You know, I live a good life. I do good things for other people. But I'll tell you, you go to some of these Christians for help.
Mm.
Unless you pray our prayers
thing is,
or
is
do
when
what we want,
we started
you don't
out
get
with
any.
Religious government. We started out with religious government, and it ended. We started out there, and we've added secularism and science and natural philosophy as time goes on. So we know what religious government looks like. History tells us that, and it wasn't very good.
No, and
it's through the addition of secularism,
separation of church and state,
and that the fights over which sect happens to be right ends because everybody is free to worship or not worship, and it's secularism that brought us that. Anybody like to?
I think that something that permeates both religion and some areas of politics is the sense of absolute arrogant certainty in the things that you've just come up with.
Yes.
you know, it's being 100% positive about things that you have no actual reason to know. That seems symptomatic of politicians like this one, who rather than actually having experts and looking into the science on something and figuring out where the evidence leads, says, well, you know, I have this belief and I'm always right.
Yeah. I've always had a problem with the notion of populism trumping science, where mm-hmm. we you know, we're a group of people, we have our opinion, we know we're right, and that's good enough for us. And
when you're standing on a ledge, you don't get to vote on gravity.
Right, and you don't get to will gravity away, no matter how much you believe in it. You cannot change reality with your mind. It just
Like prayer, wishing hard enough doesn't really doesn't get us along.
Right.
So. Well,
yeah.
You know, I just wanted to say something else real quick. You know, I just witnessed something. A friend of mine is going through, she's going to have to go through dialysis, okay?
Uh-huh.
But they told her that 250 pounds, she can't have a kidney transplant. Now, that's BS, okay?
Okay.
Because I'm in the medical field, and I know better, and I work in that area. If they could give a 600-pound man, you know, that what's the problem? Turns out the doctor, he said that she committed the sin of gluttony, and as a woman, you know, she doesn't know her place. He's like hardcore Christian. She didn't even know this, okay?
Well, she should seek a...
I said, honey, you need to switch.
She should seek a second opinion, is what that comes down to.
Oh, honey, she's using second, third, and fourth. And to add on top
Lex, I'm so sorry. We're going to have to cut you off. We have a lot of show to cover today, but I want to thank you very much for calling in.
I think you guys are great.
Thank you very much.
And did you say that the scan is going off?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, check the website, scantv.org.
Yeah,
sorry. Well, no problem. Thank you for your call, Lex.
Thanks for calling. Thank you.
Okay, love you guys.
Thank you.
No problem. Ooh. Finally, I mean, this is, to get back to this news story real quick, so this is, we don't like to inject politics into the show, because politics, atheism doesn't really suggest a political path. Atheism is a very simplistic idea. There is no God. Skepticism, which is something we will be touching on a lot today, sometimes has a political message, and that political message is the truth is the truth. That when we get down to things, data tells us something. And especially in this case, and this is where it comes down to, is the GOP with their Christian fundamentalist base. There's a lot of this is posturing. This particular guy, John Chimkus, the story goes on. It is not the first time Chimkus has sparked surprise. In May 2007, he compared the Iraq War to a baseball game between his beloved St. Louis Cardinals and the much despised Chicago Cubs. Personally, as a Cubs fan, that told me everything I needed to know.
Right. It's almost the same, except for the part where they pile up the Chicago Cubs naked and attach electrodes to them.
And they have to replace the starting team every, I don't know, 3 months because they're all dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's kind of inconvenient.
He also hit the headlines in 2009 when he walked out on President Obama as Obama delivered a speech. So this is very obvious. Now, he may actually believe this, but to me, this is very obvious political posturing at the detriment to science in the political realm. And when you bring superstition into deciding how the world works, weird things can happen, as Case will be happy to tell you.
Yes. Well, first, before I get started, I definitely want to plug my local group, Seattle Skeptics.
Okay.
Something I haven't done before in the show. We meet on the third Tuesday of every month. Check us out. Google Seattle Skeptics and become a member of the group. And if you love talking about the paranormal or science or the scientific method, this is definitely the group for you. So today's show, we're going to talk about ghost hunting pseudoscience. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen the show where they have these ghost hunters go out. They claim they'll go to a place that they claim is haunted. They set up equipment. They look around a little bit. They look for anomalies, and bang, they find them. Almost every single show, they find ghosts. But really, the scientific consensus around that is that there has been no proof of the paranormal ever uncovered. And so what I thought we'd do is I thought we'd just take a look at these shows and see where what they're doing is not science and why that is. So have you guys seen these shows? What do you think of them?
I've got a favorite one, I have to admit, because of you. When we were going over the show, you uh, showed me Ghost Adventures, which I believe is on the Travel Channel.
Yes.
And it looks like it's kind of like the Scooby-Doo because they travel around in a van and try to find ghosts, but it looks like they're on their way to a rock concert. So it's really like Scooby-Doo. And it's it is, you think that they were going for rock stars and Myst or something like that, and they go to these weird places, and one of my favorite episodes was when apparently they went back because the ghosts started asking for them by name.
Oh, that's Paranormal State,
you
I think.
Rock,
no, no, they did it on Ghost Adventure.
Oh, did they really? Okay.
Come on back. You guys were great. This was fun. Let's do this again.
Yeah, of course, the unfortunate difference between that and Scooby-Doo is that in Scooby-Doo, they, at least the classic ones, they would be presented with a series of things that look paranormal. And at the end, it's Old Man Weatherby with a mask.
That is true.
And he's using an elaborate system of mirrors to make it look like there's a ghost.
It really looked like an elaborate system of mirrors to me, but I guess unlike Scooby-Doo,
they acknowledge it.
And they also have the Three Stooges show up, which is cool.
By the way, my favorite episode of Scooby-Doo is the one where they have a pterodactyl trying to scare away the locals so that he can copy Elton John records. I love that one. I love that one.
So, does he get put in jail or a medal? Because that's great.
anyway, so they have this. So basically, all these ghost hunting shows, and they all pretty much come from the same formula from the Godfather of all, with Ghost Hunters, which is the Taps Group. In a nutshell, they follow the same formula, and that is they research a place that they say is haunted. They go to the haunted place, they spend the night with some equipment, they analyze the equipment, and then they reveal to the owner what they found. And so one of the things I thought we'd talk about is why that differs from actual science. So the first one is the premise that that if we don't know what something is, it's therefore paranormal. You know, if we find something strange, some anomaly, something we don't know what this is, it's got to be a ghost. And so, in fact, I want to go ahead and play the first clip. We have a clip on the show Ghost Lab where he talks about his this is his origin story. This is his issue number one. This is why he's a ghost hunter. Can we roll that clip?
I look over in this field and I notice this group of Union soldiers just wandering through the field. I think they're doing a reenactment. So I tell my dad, hey, pull over. I want to get this on videotape. He does. I jump out, run about halfway across this field, stop, and I pan across. They're in frame for just a few seconds, and I stop it because I want to get a little bit closer. As soon as I look up to start running again, they're gone. And I mean, nowhere to be found. They would have had to move about 300 yards in a second to be out of my sight. There was no possible way. It was at that very moment that I knew that the paranormal existed, and I've been wanting answers ever since.
Okay. So, wow. So there you have it. We don't know what this is. Therefore, ghost.
Sounds plausible to me.
Something happened. Therefore, ghosts.
Yeah. Wow. One of the problems with this logical fallacy is that, what if it is something cool? Maybe it's not a ghost. Maybe it is some unknown technology or some trick of the mind, it automatically excludes other cool things that it might be. Even if it was something that some science we're not aware of, it excludes that.
One thing I notice, I mean, you know, I can't really speak to what this guy's perception was, because I wasn't there. But one thing that's interesting is that the camera goes off at a very convenient time. I mean, the camera is on and there's guys, and then it's off and then it's on again and there's no guys. But there's no way of telling, like, I noticed there wasn't a timestamp on those.
Right.
I couldn't really look at it carefully enough to see if he was even pointing in the same direction.
Yeah.
The first time we went through it, we thought it was like a reenactment. We were expecting William Shatner to come out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'll say whatever he said he saw, he saw. But the problem is that human memory is so fallible that our perceptions are very fallible, and so it could have been an entirely ordinary event. He runs out into the middle of a field, he gets disoriented, he points the camera in the wrong direction, and he misses out completely. There are completely normal explanations for what he went through.
Right, and it would be ridiculous of us to say we know what the explanation was,
right,
because all we have is a tiny, you know, a few seconds of footage and the guy's word for it.
Right. And that's one of the things I like to think about when it comes to skepticism. Is skepticism says that it's okay to say I don't know. It's just, you know, you don't have to come up with a theory, but it's human nature to always go to the person who has a theory. Mm-hmm. If someone says, "Well, I know what it is," you may not know what it is, but I know what it is. It's a ghost, and so it's human nature to kind of gravitate towards that person. And say, well, maybe it is a ghost, and so That's one of the problems I have with this is it kind of, it makes that leap of faith of, I know what this is.
Yeah, I mean, the next question to ask if it was scientific, of course, would be, all right, let's say that there were ghosts. What would you do next to verify the difference between that being some ghosts and that just being your screwy memory that you forgot you left it off for a couple of minutes?
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing about this event is, you know, it's absolutely not repeatable.
I just saw some stuff in a field. I mean, there is, I know I'm susceptible to this, is the concept of tall tales, is that in the telling, I sort of make some changes to the story to make them more entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in the story that really points to the supernatural to me, but then it goes on and he keeps adding stuff to the story. And it's his description of the story that says this is clearly something supernatural because I don't understand what happened and all this other stuff happened besides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that happens a lot in these shows, in like the pre part of the show where they go meet the people for the first time, and it's like, well, yeah, there's a bunch of ghosts in my Volkswagen, and it was because, and here's this picture of my car, and see that glint of light, then went up and made me some pancakes, and it's the story that actually makes it from a photo error into something supernatural.
Right. You know, Dan Barker, who, you know, the fundamentalist preacher who became an atheist, has written a couple of kids' books, and one of them is about skepticism. And he's got this really entertaining story that he comes up with where a little girl is saying to another little girl, you know, I saw ghosts flying dishes around the room. And she says, really? When did you see them? And then as she asks more questions and probes into it, it's like, well, I saw the dishes in one place, and then later I saw them in another, and I heard some noises, and so people kind of fill in gaps in their memory that way.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the questions I get asked a lot, is because I do a lot of skepticism stuff, and one of the things people ask me a lot is, do you think this person made this up, or did they fake themselves out? And that's one of the things I can never answer. I never really know if they're faking themselves out or if they're just making this stuff up.
I think it might be a little column A, a little column B. Some of these people look genuinely scared. Some of them look like, hey, I'm on TV. And so, yeah, you know, you're right. It's really hard to judge.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought we'd roll clip number two. This is where the crew has, they found a place that's haunted. They've interviewed the owners, and now they're going to set up what's known as the electronic net, where they start looking for anomalies. So I thought this would be interesting to play clip number two.
All right, a lot of stuff to check out tonight. I'm going to need probably at least two people on the cameras the whole time. I don't want to miss anything going on in this house.
Yeah, set the cameras up, drop the net, do it.
All right, let's do it.
The Ghost Lab team cast an electronic net over every location they investigate. They cover the Fairfield Inn from bottom to top with video surveillance equipment, digital data loggers, and audio recorders to track any unexpected changes during the investigation. They also take a series of photographs to establish a baseline, which they can then compare with any unusual evidence.
Ready for the investigation to begin.
Wow.
Okay. So what are the problems of going to a residence, spending the night, and looking for anomalies, and just calling them ghosts? What I thought I'd do is I thought I'd kind of demonstrate why that's not science. So I haven't mentioned this in rehearsals, but I have what are ghost hunting dice. Okay.
Nice.
You're gonna get six. You're gonna get six. And we're each going to roll our dice, and we're going to look for anomalies.
Do we roll for initiative first? Or?
No.
Okay.
All right. What do you guys got?
Yahtzee.
Okay. All right. Right off the top of the bat, I've got three ones which are together. Okay?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have any sets that are... All right, you have three threes.
I have three threes, two fives, and a four, I think.
Okay, all right. Watch as the anomalies start adding up.
Oh, my gosh.
I have two fours. You also have a four. Guess what? We now have three fours.
Wait. I have four ones.
Okay.
That's like ones and a four.
And we all have fives.
When you think about it, and we have an extra, you have some fives. I have a five, and he has a five. We clearly have some anomalies here. My hypothesis.
I only see four numbers. Out of six.
You only see four numbers out of six?
Yeah, there's no twos and there's no sixes.
They're dice. They do add up though. They're probably man.
That's really strange.
I think you guys can agree that we have an anomaly here. And so my hypothesis is that ghosts have this ability to make dice, make anomalies in dice. So what we've done is we've rolled some dice, and now I've proven that this place has strong spirit activity.
Okay.
I want to go ahead and pull up slide number 3, and this is the scientific method. So basically,
this is the real scientific method.
So we have observation, we have hypothesis, and so what we're going to do is we're going to try to test the hypothesis and just see if ghosts really can control dice. Right? That's fair to say. So I'm gonna grab some dice. You'll grab some dice, and we'll roll 6.
Oh, the ghosts are onto us. Now I see 6s and 2s.
All right. So now the numbers are entirely different. Now the anomalies that we've tracked, now we have a entirely different set of anomalies. I've got 3 6s. What do you got? Any groupings of 3?
2 3s, 2 2, 2 1s, a 4, and a 5.
Okay.
I've got a couple of 3s.
Okay.
I mean,
I've got a 3-2. All right. Oh, all right. To see when we start, we can make anomalies very easily, but it doesn't actually prove ghosts. So looking back at that chart, if we could just pull that back up. So basically we have the hypothesis, and so we tried to do a test. We rolled the dice again to see if the same numbers would come up again. We got a completely different set of numbers. And I know that as we keep rolling dice, we're going to just see random numbers. We're not going to see any strong patterns in any directions. We're just going to see random numbers, and that would deflate the whole process. That would kind of blow apart my theory. So let's go ahead and let's look at we'll actually hold off on EVPs. But that's really what the problem we have with the ghost hunters is they have lots of hypotheses, but they never actually. They never actually test with their hypothesis.
Right. The problem is that I predict we will see patterns in the dice is not a theory. Because people suck at probability.
Right.
People think that they know about probability. People, when you talk to conspiracy theorists, they're going to bring up stuff that just happened, and they're going to say, like, oh, what are you going to say, that it's a coincidence? Well, you're just a coincidence theorist. Coincidences happen a lot. I mean, you know, it would be extremely surprising, for instance, if we saw sort of a pattern that looked random with no patterns to us. Because generally in random numbers, there's going to be stuff that comes up that looks non-random. That's just the nature of rolling dice.
And we're also running into some of the limitations of television here, as most of them have a half hour or an hour long show. And, I mean, this is something that all television shows have run into, specifically James Randi's television show, is that he would do the testing of things, he would do the testing of various psychic phenomena, but he'd only get to do it once because it's television. But unlike Ghost Adventures and Ghost Lab and Ghost Lab 2021, he would fully acknowledge that we only did this once, this is hardly a scientific test, but I think it shows us something.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the problems that ghost hunters, Ghost Lab, Ghost Adventures, this is the same problem they all have, is that when they find an anomaly, they chalk it up to a ghost, and then they move on. And that's not science. Science is stay there and do the work necessary to see it all through. Form a hypothesis and then start making observations and testing that hypothesis.
Right.
And that's one of the problems that they have. So I thought that would just illustrate the problems with looking for anomalies and attributing those anomalies to ghosts. Like, we don't know if an EMF reading should be this high or this low because we have no baseline to register it against. When you walk through a home and you see spikes in either temperature or EMF, you really can't.
Yeah, where's the calibration against houses they know aren't haunted?
Right.
Or do they think any houses aren't haunted? Maybe they just think that there are ghosts everywhere all the time.
Yeah, that speaks to the fact that the baseline science for proving ghosts has not been proven. We don't know that EMS can detect ghosts. We don't know that temperatures drop when ghosts are around, because it's never that fundamental work has never been done. It's all just assertions. People assert that dice can find ghosts, and then everybody just runs with that theory.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you would like to assert that your house is infested with ghosts, or in fact, if your house is not infested with ghosts, or anything about ghosts, or atheism, or anything else, please give us a call, 206-421-5658.
Okay. So what I thought we'd do is I thought we'd go ahead and one of the things that they claim in these ghost shows, and this is actually a strong component of ghost labs at the very least, is they claim that EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, are the voices of ghosts. basically, they walk around a home, they speak to the ghost, they challenge it to respond to them in some way, and then they play back the recording to see if they can pick up the ghost's voice. So I thought we'd play clip number four, and let's see what they found on Ghost Lab, the latest episode that I've seen.
Right here is where you're going to hear it. Okay. But this is the full recording. You need to come on out of the corners, out of the shadows. Sam. Give me your name. Oh, sh- dude.
Listen.
Wow. I'm saying I think it's just Private John Riley. Okay. Private John Riley.
You need to come on out of the corners, out of the shadows. Give me your name.
Private John Riley. You can hear that southern drawl in there.
Okay, what I love about this one is that at the end he says, you can even hear the southern drawl. No, you hear his southern drawl.
Yeah, I hear what Wesley Willis, personally.
Yeah.
I
mean. Yeah.
Okay, so one thing I know from seeing these clips before is that your perception tends to change once they throw up the subtitles.
Yes.
Once you're reading them, then you're trying to hear what they're hearing. So I made sure to write down what I thought I heard.
Oh, very good.
The first time before I could see the subtitles.
Okay.
And what I wrote down was house chow body.
My problem is I do some of the post-production for the podcast of this show, and that... that noise, that specific kind of watery, bloopy noise, is digital artifacting from when I turn noise cancellation up too high. That is very obviously digital artifacting. And that's...
Or the studio's haunted.
Or the studio's haunted.
Can't rule that out.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
We've got a call.
Jeffrey from Toronto.
Jeffrey from Toronto. What do you have for us?
Well, I just got a comment on these Ghost Hunter shows. I'm extremely skeptical. Russ, you and I have talked before, but that was on another program. The thing is that these shows have to get a story out and make money at it and get an audience. So they have a beginning, middle, and an end. And it's as phony as hell.
Yeah, I've got a real problem. When they have a financial interest in finding ghosts, both for ratings and for the people appearing on the show. I don't know if you have a chance, you can Google or check on YouTube. You can see where the show Ghost Hunters have actually falsified finding ghosts. Either you see tennis shoes on a ghost or a collar is being pulled and they know that there's a hanger. They prove that there's a hanger underneath this jacket. So anybody who has a vested financial interest in finding ghosts is probably going to find them.
You know, I read a little bit about Ghost Hunters when I found out that this was what we were going to be talking about today. And I found out that in the first season, they were going around claiming that actually we are, you know, skeptics. We are approaching this from a skeptical point of view. A lot of times we try to prove that it's not haunted. And what happened was in first season, it was like half the houses they found, they'd say, oh, this isn't a haunted house after all. Second season... almost all of them were haunted.
The lid came off.
Once the show started becoming popular.
Yeah.
They needed an audience, so they needed ghosts.
Right. Yeah,
they
exactly.
Embedded it out of thin air. I mean, ghosts do come from thin air, don't they?
And this is sort of I kind of see these ghost hunting things as sort of a subset of the reality TV show, in that these reality TV shows are not realistic at all, in that they're trying to make supposedly real-life events fit within an episodic dramatical arc.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have to keep in mind what they're really trying to get is an audience.
Exactly.
Yes.
They have to give it some kind of dramatic ending
yes.
to make it work.
Yeah. You know, one really...
I'm looking at the screen there. My name is actually Jeffrick.
Jeffrick?
Jeffrick? Oh, apologies.
I don't know.
Okay, and the absolutely weirdest ghost story I heard was a guy who came home in the middle of the day and saw his wife laying on the bed naked. I mean, he hadn't seen her like that in years. So he said, honey, what happened? Get dressed. We're going to the boss's house for dinner. She said, I can't. I don't have a thing to wear. And he says, what do you mean you haven't got a thing to wear? I mean, it pissed him off. So he goes to the closet door, whips it open, and says, look at this. You've got the green dress, the blue dress, the yellow dress. Hi, Frank. The black dress, the orange dress.
We need a rim shot now.
Rim shot.
Very nice.
And that EVP, if I can get you back on the topic, the EVP will pick up reception from wireless telephones 2 miles away.
Oh.
Or CV truckers.
Absolutely.
They pick up so much crap that isn't ghostly at all.
Yeah.
Just... to roll out with a little bit more geek cred, I'm also an amateur radio guy. I play a lot with ham radio, and I have a lot of this equipment that they use to sort of detect ghosts. They the field strength meters, the frequency counters. It was weird. I was watching something on that so accurate network, the History Channel, where they were delving into the depths of the Bermuda Triangle with the same Radio Shack frequency counter I bought in 1992. Wow. It was very strange. It was the only thing it compares to is the time my dad saw a movie where they were scanning for life forms with his guitar tuner. It's amazing stuff, and they do use these things, and they describe it exactly where it's this electromagnetic detector thing where it picks up a strong signal and then latches onto that signal and then tries to demodulate it in some way. We use that all the time for direction finding, for finding transmitter sites. That's what it was built for. That's what it's good at.
The piece of equipment you're talking about is they call it. It's got its own name now. It's called a ghost box. By the way, do a search for ghost box.
Oh, boy.
And this is a piece of equipment that's detuned, a radio that's detuned. And they claim that it's a radio frequency that no radio is using, and then they listen for voices. And so, anyway, I did an investigation on that a while back.
Don't forget, I mean, there's something important that's not being discussed here, which is that not only can you interpret stuff that's not voices as voices, and not only can it pick it up from other places, but, I mean, the show is edited. I mean, you know, they're doing hours and hours and hours of stuff, and, you know, if hours go by and no voice comes up, and then all of a sudden a few seconds go by and something that they can interpret as house chow body.
Yeah.
You ever wonder if somebody's picked up their cell phone and made a quick dial when they're getting bored?
Yeah, exactly. Then they can do that. And some of the shows actually like change the speed so that they can get it at a speed where the weird stuff sounds different, so that then they can pick up voices from the slow version.
Like
I hear about this in the 70s when you were playing LPs backwards to hear the voice of Steve.
That's a thing.
Paul is dead.
Well, thank you for your
Jeffrey,
call,
Jeffrey. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
And actually, that's the thing, is especially on YouTube, they have that thing where they would take cartoon theme songs from other countries and then give them their own lyrics. Is people are wired. We have a lot of wiring for detecting, for detecting patterns, for detecting noises, for hearing things, and sometimes they're a little too sensitive.
Right. It's called pareidolia. That's the phenomena of the human mind pattern matching, looking for sounds that are familiar and then filling in those sounds. Just like when you said you heard house chow body,
right.
that's pareidolia at its best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you know, it's also the phenomenon that makes people constantly erect holy sites when somebody finds an image of the Virgin Mary in a grilled cheese sandwich.
Right. Or a knot of wood, they'll see Satan. Yeah.
So
right.
you combine that with the fact that on these Ghost Hunter shows that their high fidelity microphone that catches these EVPs sounds a bit like an answering machine from 1997.
Yeah.
You're going to hear things. You're going to hear voices.
Yeah.
And it's just human nature.
So I want you to go ahead and move on to the clips. We have clip number 5, and this one is where they take this Private John Riley to the next step. I want you guys to check this out.
I've never had a response
so clear,
direct to a question in that manner before.
We got to take it further.
We need to talk to a historian.
Maybe they have records of the regiments and the names and a list.
Okay, man. So we just might have a voice of Private John Riley.
Now we need to find out if this name means anything.
We contacted Civil War historian Gary Cross to do some research for us. Now we're going to meet with him to see if he dug anything up.
Well, anything on John Riley?
Actually, yes.
Wow.
Man.
I found a private, S.J. Riley, Company I, 5th North Carolina.
Is there a record of Private John Riley actually being at the Fairfield?
No, but what's interesting about that is his records indicate that the date and the place that he was killed during the Gettysburg campaign is unknown, and that his body was never recovered. Probably died somewhere along the way, and it could very well be the Fairfield Inn.
Okay.
And then they turn to the side and say, hey, who's playing the spooky music?
Okay, so some big problems with that. You know, the historian says he's found S.J. Riley.
S.J. Riley.
And which is not John.
Which is not John Riley.
Seriously, how hard is it to find a private named John?
All right, so what we did some research on it. We actually did some research on it. And so we looked at Riley and Company I, 5th Regiment, North Carolina, and there was no S.J. Riley. There was Stephen Riley. There was actually no John Riley in that regiment. We have it listed from the American Civil War soldiers. We have a crack research team of our own. And we actually found nothing to corroborate what the historian said. We actually know where he died. We know where he got wounded. And there's nothing mysterious about it whatsoever. So I just wanted to just debunk that as fast as I could. That was S.J. Riley.
Okay, so they had to fabricate a story. But their story really didn't place him in the place that they were doing the ghost hunting. And they made it very, S.J. Riley, that J must have been John. and so they had to fabricate part of the story, but it's still barely connected to what they were doing.
It gets worse.
Oh,
it
wow.
It gets worse. We have clip number 6. Now watch as S.J. Riley becomes John Riley.
And don't forget that people can call in anytime.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Everyone we've let listen to it comes up with John Riley.
John Riley.
And we talked to an historian. He said that there was a J. Riley, died at the Battle of Gettysburg, and his body was never found. In fact, he was a part of the North Carolina regiment that passed in front of the Fairfield Inn on the retreat.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's where the clip ends anyway. But okay. You get the idea that S.J. Riley has been, the S has been dropped. And now suddenly his regiment has passed in front of the inn. That's nothing the historian said.
They just assume we're going to wave it away because you see Everett cooping it, basically. You know, oh, it must be first initial. It couldn't stand for an actual name.
Yeah.
If I can get back to the beginning of the show, this is people, I mean, we were talking about how people have absolute certainty in stuff that they've just made up, and then they try to justify it to themselves after the fact. So, I mean, you know, anything that barely fits, you know, they're justified in saying that it passes in front of, that the regiment passed in front of the inn, because we now know that we heard S.J. Riley, you know, Private John Riley and not House Chow Body. And we know that there was an S.J. Riley and that must have meant John. And so we're justified in filling in whatever details would place him in the house because that's what we want to find out. It's the opposite of the scientific method where you look into facts and then make a conclusion. They make a conclusion and then they fill in the facts.
Right. So it's sort of like ghost telephone, but not the way they mean it. Is they're having this big game of telephone where you can watch as something random they found about some Civil War regiment becomes the guy that's inhabiting.
Right. Yeah.
Because he happened to walk past the place once upon a time so many years ago. Does that mean when I die, I'm going to end up at a 7-Eleven? Because I go to those a lot.
Anything can happen. So just note the fact that we never actually said his name. From our research, his name was never revealed as Stephen J. Riley. It's actually Stephen Riley. There's actually no record of the J whatsoever. So it's even actually more of a stretch than the show is actually letting on. So I want to share with you guys one more EVP, and that's going to be clip number 7. One of the things I love about this clip is how they sell the clip, the sound to us by their enthusiasm, as if they've hit a home run. Go ahead and show us that clip.
See?
What'd you get?
Holy
What'd you get?
Hey, Barry.
Go for Barry.
Hey, you need to come in here and check this out.
All right, hold it.
Where are you?
Yeah.
Listen to that.
Done. That's it. And we got this at the exact time we saw the shadow.
Yeah, it sounds like Mary's looking for her dress.
Have you ever seen the shadow and heard the voice at the same time?
Never. That's never happened before.
That's what it's all about. Correlating evidence. Boom.
That's what it's about. Correlate the evidence. Boom. They sealed that one. That's a done deal. Okay.
sounded like a broken vacuum.
We got broken vacuum. I heard a washing machine over there. I heard cat. Sam, what did you hear?
Cows. cows.
Pareidolia is a bitch.
But I mean, once they say, he's saying, where are you? They count on a certain segment of their audience listening really hard to make it fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I love is the headphones flip off. Everyone is just adamant. This is the home run they've been waiting for. And it's clearly the opposite.
And how is Where Are You even connected to the other conversation they were having?
Well, I had the benefit of seeing the entire show. And yes, basically, they're trying to tie in Where Are You to the fact that they took the girl's dress, who they think is the ghost, and moved it outside the home.
What?
So that's what they're claiming, is that she's looking for the dress by saying, where are you?
So it's a ghost who thinks a dress is a person.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow, that's real talk show material.
Yeah, it's definitely a slam dunk.
Bam!
Yeah.
Does that ghost happen to be a Polish exorcist?
I'll leave the audience to speculate on that matter. So I want to go ahead and play clip number 8. This is where they're going to show us an actual hypothesis. This is their theory for a phenomenon called the Shadow Man that they're seeing. Go ahead and roll that clip.
First picture.
Wait a second. Who was in front of you?
Nobody's in the room with me.
Look at it. No, go back. Look how it's shaped.
Classic shape.
That is a classic shape of a shadow person.
We got to retest it, though.
What room is that?
That's the 1757 room upstairs.
Upstairs.
What exactly is the theory on shadow people? What is it?
What we've seen is that it's like a temperature variance on the environment. So we're thinking that they're thermal anomalies that your eye is picking up, almost like a black hole.
What?
It's a temperature variance that you could see with the eyes, like a black hole.
Then how are they standing there?
It's ghost lab science. It's ghost lab science.
I want to send this as a shout out to my fiance. Her pet peeve is when people use the word theory when they should be saying hypothesis.
Hypothesis.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I may have.
It's
done
not
that.
A theory.
And I may have even it's done it the course theory. Of this show. So my apologies to your fiance. But they
did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we're making fun of them anyway.
Yeah. So they have this hypothesis, none of which the science does back up at all. I'm not aware of a temperature variance that's like a black hole that causes shadows to occur. It's just not known in science.
Did he mention vibrations? I'm surprised he didn't mention vibrations. That's usually vibration territory.
What's funny about this is they claim to be one of the more scientific of all the shows, that they bring their own lab and they're science based. You know.
Well, he did say black hole.
He did say black hole, and
that's
he did say temperature variance.
Mm.
Yeah. So, anyway, what I want to do is go to the last clip that we have, and this is kind of the wrap up where they get the owner, they bring him in, they show him what they found, and what I've done here is this is actually the opposite. This is actually the claim to the owner at the beginning of the show, and what I've done here is that we've let them collect all their evidence, but I want you to play what the owners originally claim is going on and see how much that differs. They claim a shadow man and these EVPs for Private John Riley and the dress. So go ahead and play clip number 9. Let's see how it differs from what the owner is claiming is happening.
What are some of the paranormal claims that happen in this building?
Oh my gosh. Whenever somebody comes in either this room or they're downstairs in the dining room, they get the willies, they don't want to be in the room, they want to be seated somewhere else, they feel like somebody's touching them on their backs.
Well, Sal, let me ask you, have you actually experienced any of this?
I'm always the skeptic. I'm the recording engineer, I'm the logical thinker, and I can explain away just about everything, mm-hmm. you know. But then there are some stories that people tell you, and you have to just, they certainly believe what they're telling me.
Yeah.
So the owners claim that people get the willies and they're uncomfortable. And that's it.
I have an explanation. They're really bad hosts.
So that could be it.
Could be it.
maybe the owners creep everybody out. You know, it could be something as normal as that.
Maybe that's where the fan vent is or something. You know, it could be anything. We do have a call, Jimmy from Seattle, and you've got some evidence for us, apparently.
Jimmy, what do you got?
Well, I actually have an episode. I don't remember actually what the program is entitled, but it's from the Discovery Channel, which is, of course, the sister channel to the Rewrite History Channel. And the what they had done, and they conducted giant tank simulations to prove their hypothesis. But what they actually concluded in that show is that the result of the sinking ships and the exploding airplanes in the Bermuda Triangle is the result of methane hydrate releases out of the ocean.
So I didn't catch that. Methane hydrate?
Methane hydrate.
Okay.
The oil rig workers and fishermen call it flammable snow.
Okay. Okay. So it's sort of the burning sea surf stuff, right?
It's a gas that's in ice form at the bottom of the ocean because of the pressure and the temperatures.
Okay. I'm sort of out of my area.
I know that James Randi looked into the phenomena of the Bermuda Triangle. He reviewed some author's work from the 70s, and this one, the Bermuda Triangle, was big.
Okay.
And what he found was that many times when the planes had been claimed to have crashed wasn't even in the Bermuda Triangle. I mean, you guys know about the Bermuda Triangle. It's like that area near Florida between Bermuda, Bahamas, something like that. Forgive me for not even knowing exactly where the triangle is, but basically the notion was that a lot of planes would crash in this area. And so I guess what our caller is saying is that maybe there's some methane gas or something that affected people or something. I apologize for not knowing, Jimmy.
I think the methane gas is
explosive. It's like natural gas.
Okay. I think that's actually even more complicated than it needs to be, because what I found was that what I seem to remember is that all the evidence, so-called, for the Bermuda Triangle phenomenon was anecdotal, and that actually no more planes disappear in the Bermuda Triangle than actually disappear all over the place all the time.
Right. I mean, given the same amount of air traffic, right.
It's just like finding a pattern of threes.
Yes.
In the dice on the table. If a bunch of strange things seem to happen in a row, then people say, "Oh, that's a pattern." Again, people suck at probability.
Like I said, I'm a little bit out of my area, but I'm still pretty certain that even a natural gas release in sort of the megaton range would still be pretty diffuse by the time you hit airplane altitudes. Is that you've got basically the entire atmosphere of that region to dissipate that gas, and
it has to happen quickly. It would have to happen quickly.
Well, it takes a minute for the meteorologically for air at the surface to come up to an airplane height, even when we're talking 1940s propeller airplanes, at just to say nothing of airplanes these days that go 30,000-40,000 feet in the air. And so that may be an adequate explanation for what happened to some of the ships, especially when they're made out of wood. But it doesn't really account for all of the airplanes. As airplanes are dented, at least I wouldn't think we need more testing on that, I would say. But
Well, I can't speak to the gas theory, but thank you very much for calling. Appreciate the input.
Yeah, hypothesis.
Oh, sorry, hypothesis.
Yeah, thank you for your call. I'm certain if there's any part of that where I'm wrong, I'll hear about it, and we'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah. So I want to before we move on to other topics, I want to pull up slide number 10. This is a local ghost hunting group that they like to show the evidence that they've come across in their investigations for ghosts. And this is the ghost orb that they found over a fireplace. Now take a good look at this picture, and what's the problem with this picture? Go.
Lens flare.
Mirror.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. I mean, you can tell just by looking at it that this picture, can we put that back up? That this picture was taken with a flash camera.
Yeah.
You can actually see the strong shadow behind the guy in the foreground, and you see the strong flash on the woman with the camera on the left. And so, absolutely, that is just...
Look, the guy on the right is even blinking from the flash.
Yes. Is that a martini?
Yeah. So I approached the group about it, and I asked them, well, I mean, that's very clearly lens flare. I mean, you know, how can you say that that's a ghost orb? And his answer to that was, we put that up there so that people can make up their own minds.
Nice.
Yes. That's a cop-out I see and hear all the time.
Was he holding a martini in his hand? What was that?
No, he was not.
Okay,
oh, he was holding a camera.
I was holding a camera.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if it
not
was a
to
martini.
Not get into the politics again, but isn't that practically the motto of Fox News?
Well, if you'd like to talk to us about this and discuss some of this or the show or the future or whatever, and you like martinis or you don't like martinis or cameras or no cameras, you can come talk to us, visit with us. We'll be at the RAM at Northgate at 5 p.m. Once again, we're interested in debate and even sometimes heated debate. But if you're just going to yell at us or decide that we're wrong for being atheists and just yell and scream and try and get us thrown out, stay away. But if you want to have an interesting talk and discuss what we do on the show here, come on by.
Yeah. I feel like my friends back in Austin would not forgive me if I failed to get in a plug. Do you
please.
Mind?
Oh, please. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
I hope you guys have enjoyed the show. I've had a great time being with you guys.
Excellent.
You
Thank
have
you.
A classy operation here,
Thank
and
you.
It's a shame you're being shut down. But if you'd like to see more of us Austinites, you can check out the Atheist Experience. That's atheist-experience.com. You know, we're also on Sundays, and I think we're on at a slightly different time slot, so you can watch both shows.
Absolutely. There's a lot of discussion. I mean, you guys have been very helpful to us and very helpful to get us off the ground.
Thank you
we
very
thank
much.
Thank you guys on very show. Thank you very much for coming out.
Yeah.
And thank you for today's topic.
This has been a real treat.
Yeah, this has been great.
It's been a blast. Absolutely.
So if you'd like to call us and you didn't get in time, we do have a voicemail line at 206-420-0997. You'll hear me explaining the voicemail system to you. We'll it gets sent to us and we may edit it to put it on the air. So, but once again, thank you both very much. And
thank you for having me.
Future skepticism shows that I'll be doing are we're going to look at woo-woo bracelets in the future.
Oh,
I'm
looking
forward
to that. With the Aqua Titanium?
Yes, the Aqua Titanium.
My Those aren't the ones that make you live forever, are they?
No, they just improve performance. And they aid
you from
your
being
immune
yanked,
system. But they use these very, very general terms. And it's really funny to try to get them to back up the claims.
I believe those have vibrations, actually.
Because, you know, there are bracelets that make you live forever. They have magnets, so that they work.
Just like magnets do in real life, yes.
Yep.
All magnets make you live forever.
Okay, well, that would be the show. Thank you all for listening and or watching, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.